AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you mind? We're playing through. Here's Froggy and Wacker.
It is another edition of the Playing Through podcast. It's Froggy from Elvis Duran on the Morning Show, along with Ryan Wacker from Golf Digest. Hit us anytime on social media at Playing Through Podcast on Instagram, or at Froggy Radio and at Brian Wacker 1. I don't really know what else to say other than wow. What a weekend in sports we had. I know we had a lot going on in the golf world, but I feel like even though this podcast is generally about golf, we talk about sports, we talk about all kinds of stuff, to not start off and talk about what happened on Sunday morning in Calabasas, California, we would be remiss in our duties. And Wacker, I know you are a huge Lakers fan. I know Kobe Bryant, one of your favorite athletes. You and I were texting back and forth on Sunday, and still, even now, 3 or 4 days later, it still just doesn't seem real. Would you agree?
It doesn't. It's surreal. And every time you sort of get on with your day, or at least for me, and sort of do things, and then, you know, you come across another tribute, another moment, another situation, reliving it, it hits you again. And, you know, I'm here in Arizona for the Waste Management Phoenix Open, and I was on the driving range yesterday, ran into Justin Thomas. You know, like so many other people, JT is a huge fan of Kobe, and you know, he said it hit him hard, like he's still shaken up about it. And you know, he's got some nice tributes. We'll talk about that and some things he's going to do this week to honor Kobe, and it's still jarring. And then as you know, the details emerge of what happened. It's tough. You feel bad for the whole Bryant family, of course, the 7 other people who perished in that accident. And it's hard, man. It's just, you feel bad from the standpoint of, you know, Kobe was on the second act of his life, his career that was just getting started. There's sort of Kobe, the basketball icon. And then there's Kobe, the dad, you know, the suddenness of it, the shock. It's going to be a long time, I think, before people get over it. And you feel for, obviously, Kobe's wife, his kids, and the other families, of course, who lost loved ones as well. So it's tough to even talk about.
It really is. You know, you see all the stories that are coming out now, and this always seems to happen when somebody passes away. There's a story here I want to read you. It's a little long, it's a little winded, and it's a story that I've seen now all over the place, and so I don't know if it's urban legend. I don't know. Whatever it is, I want it to be true, and so that's why I want to share it. This is from somebody who had a child that was sick and in a hospital in Phoenix, and it says the pediatric cardiologist that they worked with wanted to get an autograph for a little boy, and the little boy's name was Kobe. He was 5 years old. He was a dying patient. So they reached out through the Phoenix Suns and made a request, thinking that there was absolutely no way anything would happen. The Lakers were coming to play the Phoenix Suns later that week. A day later, they received a phone call that said, not only will Kobe do it, but he said he read the story about your little boy. He was floored. He wants to meet him. So the next day, with the support of the family, a limo brought Kobe to the office under the cloak of secrecy. Neither security or PR were informed. They snuck up a back stairwell to the little boy's room in the cardiac ICU. For the better part of an hour, they played basketball, passing it back and forth with little Kobe, laughing his sweet mama smiling and laughing. Several autographed items were left. Many photos were taken. The machines keeping him alive were dinging, whirling, and alarming, and his doc was grinning from ear to ear as Tom and I stood nearby watching the unbelievable scene unfold before us. When they got back into the limo, Kobe turned to this person and said, "What can I do to help? If it's a financial thing, I can take care of that." They said it was not a financial thing. The little boy had a heart defect, and unfortunately, 3 or 4 days later, the little boy passed away. 3 weeks later, the mom got a letter and describing the power in those moments. She said that they were the only photos that she had of her little boy smiling. And according to Kobe's PR people, he did this all over the place. He would do this all the time. This is the kind of person that Kobe was. And they said that he and his daughter had been to communion, had been to church just before getting on the helicopter that Sunday morning. You could see all the images now that you see coming out. Kobe had really immersed himself into being a family man and being a great father. I see the trending hashtag girl dad all over Instagram and all over Twitter now. He really had immersed himself in his daughter's basketball career. She was very good. They were going to Mamba Academy. He had just trademarked the term Mambacita because he was Mamba, and he had trademarked Mambacita for her. And the UConn College is where she was supposed to go to college. I mean, it really was on a fast track of she was headed down that road of greatness as well. And to have it all just ripped away. I don't know if you've seen the deal last night on NBA on TNT. Shaquille O'Neal last night just completely destroyed him. Wade telling stories about how hard Kobe worked. Even on the road, he would go and opposing teams' gyms and shoot after the game until 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to work on his game. And, I mean, just so many stories come out now, and it's so unfortunate that they come out now after Kobe's passed away. But, I mean, people can look at it however you want to look at it, but the truth is, no matter how much money you have, no matter how much fame you have, life is so fragile and can be snatched away in a matter of moments. And it just, we have to stop living for the weekend, have to stop living for the next vacation or living for the next event, and just live for today.
Yeah, I mean, well said. And I would implore, you know, I rewatched Kobe Bryant's Muse the other day, and which I'd seen before, but for some reason, probably just because I was sitting on an airplane and really had nowhere else to go, I watched it all the way through the closing credits. And before that, actually, there was middle-aged to older gentleman sitting next to me, and you could see that I was watching this, and you could see him tearing up,
yeah,
watching it. And anyway, so that gives you an idea of just sort of the transcendent, you know, power. And then he sort of started asking me questions about Kobe and so forth. But you watch it. I would implore anybody who hasn't seen it, watch it. It's a terrific piece of filmmaking. It's real. It's genuine. There's authenticity to it. Kobe addresses a lot of the flaws and mistakes he's made in his life and so forth. And I think it's well done. But I would suggest to anybody that does watch it to watch it all the way through the closing credits, because it's almost spooky. There's these incredible images and cuts of Kobe at home with his family, his wife, his kids, and the Beyonce song EXO playing over that. Wow. It's powerful imagery looking back on it now, you know, given the events of Sunday. So, yeah, I'm sure we'll see tributes all week here at the Phoenix Open. I'm fairly certain we're going to see tributes at the Genesis Invitational next month in LA, about 20 or so miles from where the crash occurred, and sort of in between where the crash occurred and where Lakers play at Staples Center. So we'll see some tributes there. Of course, Tiger Woods' tournament. Tiger, you know, we'll get into this as well. He was, you know, we talked about in the opening, he found out on Sunday when he walked off the golf course.
Yes, I want to get into that, and that it happened in the middle of the golf tournament on Sunday, the Farmers Insurance Open underway, fourth round, playing golf. And the story starts to break. TMZ breaks it. You start seeing it on a couple other news outlets. And then all the majors break it. Fox, NBC, ABC, ESPN, everybody's got it out, and it starts breaking. And so you start wondering, when is Tiger going to know? Because Tiger and Kobe are friends. So when is Tiger going to find out? Obviously not going to pull his phone out in the middle of the round. But people start talking. There's chatter going around. I'm sure Joey LaCava knew. You start wondering. And Tiger did not – he kind of in the middle of the round did not play that well. And so there was speculation that maybe he did know in the middle of the round, and that's why his mind wasn't there. And I know that you have spoken to some other tour players, and some guys did find out in the middle of the round, and we found out later that Tiger was not told until walking off the 18th tee, going to the scoring center. Tiger was told by Joey LaCava. There's video of it. You hear Tiger say, "Excuse me." That is when they believe Tiger was told, and then he spoke to Amanda Baliones on television after, and you could see that he was a man that had just found out and was in shock. You can talk about this as well, that Tiger had heard people say, "Do it for Mamba, do it for Mamba," on the golf course, and it didn't really make sense to him as to why, and it made sense later. But some players found out in the middle of the round, correct?
Yeah, some players figured it out. Some players asked about it. You had Billy Horschel, for example, waiting on the tee box for the green to clear, had heard, you know, the fans and so forth. So he pulled out his phone and checked, see what they were talking about. So he found out toward the end of his round. Other players similarly found out. And these guys, like the rest of us, you know, they're huge fans, and they're human too. So a lot of them have families. A lot of them have little kids. A lot of them travel, you know, by small private planes. So the parallels, you know, can hit home for these guys. And it's just human, all right? I mean, we talked about it before, right? The second act of Kobe is how close he was with his family. Just the impact. I mean, we've seen other celebrities, athletes, et cetera, die tragically. I'm not sure in my lifetime I've seen this kind of outpouring of emotion, tributes, et cetera. Maybe a JFK Jr., maybe a Princess Diana.
I think the closest thing in the sports world I remember is watching the Daytona 500 when Dale Earnhardt Sr.
crashed
in the final turn, and he died while performing his sport. To me, that's the one that sticks out as that was the last time we saw something like this. Kobe didn't die on the basketball court, but still, to lose a sports figure so suddenly – the last time I remember something like this to me was Dale Earnhardt Sr. at the Daytona 500.
Yeah. And look, let's face it. I mean, you know, the worldwide impact of it just wasn't on the same level. No disrespect, obviously. It's still a terrible thing. But it was, and to your point, it was racing. We've seen other fatalities in racing. I think this just the suddenness of it, the shock of it, you know, just the craziness of it. I mean, this is a guy who commuted in a helicopter for years back and forth to practice and so forth. And you know, now we're finding out that maybe weather played a factor in terms of the fog and so forth. Who knows? But obviously a terrible loss. And here in the golf world, you know, we're going to continue to see, I think, tributes. You're going to see it a couple ways this week. As I mentioned, Justin Thomas, he's got a couple wedges that are stamped with some tributes to Kobe Bryant. He's got 81 on one wedge for, of course, the 81 points that Kobe Bryant scored, second most in NBA history, against the Toronto Raptors back in 2006. He's got Black Mamba stamped on another. He's got Mamba Mentality stamped on one. He's got Kobe Bean Bryant stamped on a wedge. So really cool stuff there. He's got a very cool putter head cover that is in purple and gold, and he's got "Rip Kobe" and "Rip Gigi" written on it. He's also going to be wearing a Kobe Bryant Lower Merion High School basketball jersey when he plays the Pro-Am today on Wednesday on the 16th hole at TPC Scottsdale. And I believe he may have another jersey too with him for during the week once the tournament starts as well. So we'll see that. We'll see John Rahm and Matthew Wolf, I believe, are going to play with some golf balls that with the numbers 24 on them, courtesy of TaylorMade. I believe they will have them in time for play when they tee off on Thursday as a tribute. Of course, John Rahm, for people who haven't seen that, he was also a big Kobe Bryant fan, posted an emotional tribute on his Instagram on Sunday night after his runner-up finish at the Farmers Insurance Open. And then we'll see Tony Finau perhaps do something this week or maybe in L.A. next month when they play at Riviera. So I think we're going to continue to see these tributes, not just in the golf world, of course, but everywhere, for who knows how long, and they're well-deserved.
Yeah, we're seeing it in the NBA. You see guys riding on their shoes, and I'm guessing that you're going to see some shoes. I reached out to the gentleman we spoke to last week, Rolly from Nomad Customs, and he has made some Lakers shoes and whatnot and is working with some guys on putting together some custom shoes as well. So I think, like you said, we're going to see some stuff this week. I know next week is the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, which is also in California. And then, once again, like you had already mentioned, Tiger's Tournament in very close in proximity to both the crash site and to where Kobe played. So these tributes will not just happen this week at the Waste Management. There'll probably be a lot of them because it's still fresh on the mind. And I know the 16th hole is a much more lax in environment, and so you're probably going to see a lot of stuff there with the jerseys and whatnot. But I think this is something that will continue on, and rightfully so, because Kobe was. You're really hearing all the stories now. Richard Sherman, who's playing in the Super Bowl this weekend for the San Francisco 49ers, said that when he tore his Achilles, that Kobe was a huge presence in helping him recover after Kobe had been through the same thing. You find out all these stories now, and so we will be seeing so much of this this week at the Waste Management. But there's some other changes going on in the golf world this week at the Waste Management. Matthew Wolf, I know you said he's going to play a ball with 24 on it, courtesy of TaylorMade. I noticed on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday watching the telecast that his caddy was not the guy that had been caddying for him since he won last year. It was, in fact, Keith Sbarbaro from TaylorMade. Do you know anything about that, Wacker?
Well, other than it's fairly early in Matthew Wolf's career, and he's already changed caddies now, what, twice? Have J.P. Fitzgerald on the bag briefly. Of course, J.P. was longtime caddy for Rory McIlroy. But look, we see this all the time, guys changing caddies. Interesting, though, that this early in Wolf's career that, you know, we're seeing already a couple of changes in terms of the caddy. So, but this is not uncommon. You will see guys make changes.
Is it uncommon this early in the year to make a change like that? Like, is that something you do in the off season usually?
It really depends. You know, you stick around the game long enough and you see guys make changes. Hell, you see guys make changes in the middle of a tournament sometimes. Right. So we've seen it happen in the middle of a round, a caddy get fired. So really not much surprises me in that aspect, but it is certainly a little bit different, I would say, to see a player change caddy this early into 2020.
Yeah, you know, I'd seen also, I was reading an article about J.P. Fitzgerald that he had suggested after caddying for a couple rounds, he suggested that Wolf change his, make a driver or a three-wood change or some type of face angle change or something, whether it was loft or something, and that's why they split. So sometimes maybe a caddy has maybe a little bit too much input. The caddy that he had won with the first time they went out. It's when he won the 3M last year. But then I guess things had since soured, and now so he – Keith had caddied for him last week. Not sure if he'll be on the bag this week or if he's found a new caddy. I guess we'll find out when we see Matt on Thursday. Any other news you got for the Waste Management? I know you're out there and you've been on the range and seen what's going on. Any other news you got going out this week?
Well, there'll be plenty happening, of course. As I mentioned, there'll be a lot around Kobe Bryant tributes this week. But we also had some reaction, of course, to the Premier Golf League, and that.
What is that exactly?
So essentially, the easiest way I could describe it to you would be, you know, look, we all remember the USFL taking on the NFL, and this would be similar. Now, that said, this is something that's, I think, a long shot at best. in terms of actually coming to fruition. It's effectively another tour that would emerge and challenge, you know, the PGA Tour from the standpoint of trying to lure the top names in the sport with guaranteed money. There's a team ownership aspect to it. There's fewer events, bigger purses for every event, $10 million purses for each event and so forth, and all sorts of financial incentives. But problem is, of course, you've got to land those big stars, and that's a big ask. Now, that said, I had a chance to talk to some players about it this week here in Phoenix after the news broke last week in San Diego. I think, if anything, it could serve as a catalyst for change on the PGA Tour, because let's face it, the model for the tour has been, you know, the status quo has been this way for a long time. We've seen sponsors come and go. You know, you wonder how long the current format or structure, how viable that is in the long term. Look, it's worked beautifully to this point. These guys have made a lot of money. The tour has raised a lot of money for charities. They announced a huge, you know, another huge year in 2019 in terms of
charity. Yeah, just yesterday they announced they've given $3 billion to charity, over $100 million from the players. Stays here in Northeast Florida, where I am, in Jacksonville, in the Ponte Vedra area. So they do a lot of charity work. However, this league shows up, and all of a sudden, maybe it does lend itself to some changes happening on the tour.
Because let's remember, the tour works for the players. It's not the other way around like it is in most leagues. So this is a player-driven sport, and they've got most of the power. You know, that said, they obviously, there's the history of the game with the major championships. There are, other elements to this where, for example, when you play in the PGA Tour, if you're a member, you have to get a release from the tour if you want to play an event that runs concurrent to your home tour. So the tour has to allow you. Now, there are cases, certainly, if you're a European Tour and a PGA Tour member, that's different. But if you were to play a non-sanctioned event, let's say in Turkey, like we had in Turkey a few years ago, we saw players, get releases from the tour to be allowed to do that. And the tour limits in the regulations how many releases they grant players. There are exceptions, of course, but it effectively makes it difficult. And in an email to players on Monday, the commissioner made all of these points clear. Starting with, look, if players are going to have to decide if they want to play on the PGA Tour or if this should come to fruition, whether they want to play there. And they're not opposed to putting in more regulations to make it effectively more difficult for players to play a different tour or play that tour in specific. So,
yeah, I mean, I see where the PGA Tour has got to protect themselves at 100%.
Sure, of course. So at the end of the day, though, I think this is a lot of bluster. It's actually been talked about for a few years. I don't think it ever really amounts to I certainly don't think we'll get to the point where we have this existence of another league. We've seen it fail in other sports. You look at football trying with the USFL trying to take on the NFL, different circumstances and variables, of course. But look, the golf calendar is already crowded as it is. The PGA Tour has proven to be a massively powerful tour. But I could see this being the driving force for creating a more global tour, maybe the PGA Tour one day, buying the European Tour, and then having a more global schedule like we see in tennis, for example. So I could see that something along those lines happening, but in this perhaps maybe is the catalyst to getting that done. So who knows? A lot to play out, but it's certainly been talked about by the players and been a hot topic behind closed doors.
Yeah, and I mean, speaking like you said, the calendar is so crowded, there really is no downtime for the PGA Tour, whereas the NFL. So now this year, you know, the XFL tried years ago to go against the NFL, and it did not work. They folded. Now they have started back up again. And they will start the week after the Super Bowl. So what they're trying to do is, when the Super Bowl ends, the XFL has decided, hey, let's give the American public, let's continue to give them football for a longer period of time. And so it'll run from the beginning of February through the end of April. And so I think they're trying to say, hey, instead of going against the NFL, let's extend the NFL. And so there really is no opportunity to do that on the PGA Tour because, let's be honest, it feels like the PGA Tour season really doesn't end. There's really not a spot for them to jump in and kind of build that bridge between the two seasons because it's a wraparound now. So there really isn't a spot, but if it does cause change and if it causes a beneficial for both the players and the fans, I think something like this is all good.
And speaking of no breaks in the schedule, we're on to another week. Obviously, I'm here in Phoenix, as you mentioned, the waste or wasted management, Phoenix Open, as I like to call it, for all of the stuff that has absolutely nothing to do with golf that goes on this week. It's really golf's biggest party atmosphere. And
it's the most attended golf tournament of the year, correct?
Yes. Yeah, by far. It's not close. It's a huge party. You've got a huge population here. It's a college town or college area. You've got a huge school in Arizona State nearby. So you get a ton of people here. We're all familiar with that. It's, of course, the 16th hole in the stadium there. You know, look, In my opinion, I think it's getting to the point where it's gone a little too far, I think, with some of this, with some of the behavior we see in the stands. But, look, at the end of the day, it's a huge event, hugely attended event, makes a ton of money. So that's not changing anytime soon.
And Ricky Fowler is our defending champion this week. I know he's there. What are some of the other biggest names in the field? I know some guys tend to skip this event, whether they don't like the golf course or they just need a week in between or whatever it is. What are some of the big names?
You know, or guys are just, they're simply tired of it. Pat Perez is not in the field, for example, because, you know, I think he reached a point where he's just sick of what goes on in the stands here and trying to play a golf tournament. So some guys don't play it for that reason. But we do have a few big names here. As you mentioned, Ricky, you got Gary Woodland in the field. John Rahm, of course, he's got a chance to become number one in the world. He's in the field coming off that runner-up finish in Torrey Pines. So Jordan Spieth in the field. He going the other way, of course, now outside the top 50 in the world for the first time in I think 7 years. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes this week and where he goes from here. We're off and running with golf's biggest party again this week here in Phoenix.
We are. And also, everybody had mentioned real quick before we let you go, I know you've got some stuff to do there in Phoenix. I know this year's points system, they said that even though Tiger didn't win Torrey Pines, he finished in ninth place. And he would have finished a little higher had that ball stayed in the hole that popped out of the hole on number two on Sunday.
How about that? How amazing was that?
Unbelievable.
We're pricing in the physics on that one, yeah.
So Olympic points are really counting towards the whole season, so they're trying to qualify for the Olympics. Mm. But just yesterday, some guys don't seem – Tiger has really appeared to be all in when it comes to the Olympics, but some guys don't seem to be all in.
Yeah, and I think we've seen this since golf has been reintroduced back into the Olympics 4 years ago. So we've seen it with guys like Adam Scott, Rory McIlroy, who has since sort of changed his feelings on it. I think once he saw what the experience was like for other people. Some people, though, as you mentioned, have been all in from the beginning. We've seen it with Tiger being all in on it. We saw Ricky Fowler, of course, all in on it. Patrick Reed, of course, others. So I think it just, you know, look, golf is not a Olympic sport, typically, at least not something most of these guys think of in terms of importance. You've got the major championships, you've got even World Golf Championships or a few other events, places like the Memorial or Bay Hill or Genesis or the Players, of course. So where does it fit in that realm, in that world? So
right.
I think a lot of guys just don't know how to feel about it because it's not something that has been drilled into them for so long. You know, when they were kids, you weren't making a putt to win an Olympic gold medal. You were making a putt to win the Masters or the Open. So I think it's hard for them to wrap their head around it. I think some guys have come around, of course, because they did see the experiences that Justin Rose and Ricky Fowler and Henrik Stenson and others have had in the Olympics. So some guys have changed their mind. But as you mentioned, Brooks and Dustin this week playing in Saudi Arabia, you know, they sounded lukewarm on maybe the idea of it. So, look, I think that could certainly evolve and change over the next few weeks, months. But some guys are going to be on board with it and some guys are not.
So let me go over the top 10 Olympic point golf rankings very, very early, I might add. Number 10 is Adam Scott. At 9, Oosthuizen. At 8, Fleetwood. At 7, Rose. Tiger at 6. Your top 5 are Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, John Rahm at 3, Rory at number 2, and Brooks Koepka currently at number 1 in your Tokyo 2020 Olympic golf ranking. So, I mean, it'll be something to follow as the year goes on.
Yeah, up to 4 guys from each country. So it'd be interesting to see where Tiger sits, because a lot of those names you mentioned, you know, there's a lot of Americans there. So it'll be interesting to see.
Yeah, so if it were today, it would be Brooks, Justin Thomas, Dustin Johnson, and Tiger Woods would be the top 4 Americans, because 4 of the top 6 are Americans. The only ones that aren't are Rory and Johnny Rahm are the only ones it's not. So the top 4 Americans would get in. Tiger would get in as of today. But we got a lot of golf to be played between now and when they do determine and they close down and set the Olympic field. So, Wacker, enjoy your weekend at the Wasted Management. I'm sure you're going to see probably some things you shouldn't see at a golf course, is my guess.
Well, I'll be one of the few people that's not wasted because I actually have to work. So,
right,
yeah.
Right.
So you'll everyone see, else will be having a good time. Yeah.
Yeah, lots of good stuff on 16, I'm sure. Talk to the security guards. I know you're writing another article for Golf Digest. You can always read Wacker's articles in Golf Digest magazine or at golfdigest.com. We will be back next week after the Waste Management. We'll be back, and we will preview the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, which tends to be kind of a more laid-back, lax event. And we will be another week out from Tiger and the Genesis, which I'm guessing, as we had said earlier, you'll see a lot more Kobe tributes. Enjoy your weekend in Scottsdale, and try not to imbibe like the locals there.
Playing Through with Froggy and Wacker.
Last season on the Choosing Sides F1 podcast, we established unequivocally that F1 is the pinnacle of motorsports.
We did, but honestly, I was left with more questions than answers, Tony.
I'm Tony Karen Brown, a tech, culture, and F1 commentator.
And I'm Michael Costa, comedian from The Daily Show.
Join us for season 2 of Choosing Sides F1.
Our F1 102, if you will.
And get all of the answers.
All of them? Listen to Choosing Sides F1 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts,
or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Julian Edelman from Games with Names, and we're on a search to find the greatest games of all time with the players and coaches who lived in them. Ever wonder what a locker room feels like at a halftime of a Super Bowl? Or what about the after parties? We're going to dive deep into the most iconic games with the most iconic people. New episodes dropping weekly. Listen to Games with Names on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.